Right, the first talking point is the non-runner rule change. Now, this is due to come in on the flat. It was brought into more sharp focus when we had a horse whip round at the start yesterday at Sandown Lee, and Steve Drown came out and said there is literally nothing that we can do about it. And the horse, it was punted in the morning, ended up going off about 12 to 1. What did you make of all of that? Quite unsatisfactory.
Yeah, well, I mean, if we start with the flat change, I suppose that's where that's what has happened. Brandon Dunshay, the BHA's chief regulatory officer, has been keen to do this for a while, Alex, whereby at the moment you've had situations such as the Dash at Epsom last year, where not all the stalls have opened at precisely the same time, and yet those horses who have been disadvantaged by that have had to be declared runners, and that isn't satisfactory for the connections of those horses, but also anyone who has backed those horses. And it's also left Britain out of sync with some of the major international jurisdictions. That will change from Monday. What will mean is that where stalls don't open at precisely the same time, or where, for example, a horse has an issue with headgear in the start, or maybe where the blanket has been left on when the stalls are open, stewards will now have discretionary powers to look at those incidents and potentially deem the horse a non-runner. At the moment, they can only do that if the stall actually doesn't open, or if the horse comes out of the stall without a rider. The situation hasn't been satisfactory. This will make it better, but even Brant Dunch admits it isn't perfect. There's no perfect situation, because listening to Nick's pod during the week, they made the good point that you might have a horse whose stall opens slightly later than the others, but that horse then still goes on to, say, finish second in Group 1. You know, what do you do then? In Hong Kong, they've got a rule where the first, second, third and fourth have to be declared runners, regardless of what happens at the stall. So I think we're going to be in a better position from Monday, but not a perfect position. And as we'll see with the next talking point, the situation still doesn't apply to jump racing.
Yes, indeed. And that was brought into focus by the 150 at Sandown yesterday. Those occasions on the flat are going to be oh so rare, aren't they? I mean, it's an international harmonisation rule, but it's not necessarily one that we're going to see implemented or having to be dealt with that often. Yet, yesterday at Sandown, this is probably more of a regular occurrence.
Yeah, so what happened here, Masai Mara, who had been well-backed in the morning for this 100 grand novices handicap hurdle, see there on the right-hand side of the picture, before the tapes were about to rise, the horse whips round under Jack Tudor. The starter, however, we've seen a second, hasn't picked up on the fact that the horse is facing in the wrong direction and lets the field go.
OK, let me ask the jockeys. Harry, what's it like when you're down at the start, surrounded by a crowd of horses? I'm assuming there's a lot of jostling, there's a lot of verbals, there's a lot of talking going on. Is there? What's your understanding of the, say, the communications that are going on? Say, the starter, you can see the flag person further down the track as well. What's it like to be in that environment?
Well, I suppose the easy thing to do is point the finger at the starter and say you shouldn't have let them go. But when you've got a 20 runner handicap, it's the first race of the day on a big Saturday, it's worth 100 grand, you've got 10 people wanting the same position with probably spread out 15 across the track there, and the starter's got his eyes on everyone else, but there's one horse at the end which is just sort of whipped round. You can see Jack Tudor was trying to pull him back round the right way, and he's just, I think it's just one of those unfortunate incidents where the horse has cocked his jaw to go round, to spin round. Jack couldn't do anything about it. The starter probably couldn't see it, and he's dropped the flag and we've left one behind. But it doesn't happen very often. It's just one of those things. And I suppose for an owner, it's frustrating. For a trainer, it's frustrating. And the jockey, but you've just got to put it down as bad luck, put a line through it and go again.
Is there too much interpretation here, Lee, in terms of what's a starter, what isn't a starter? Or can there be a blanket rule that a horse like that should just be a non-runner, and if there has to be a rule for, there is?
I guess there's always going to be an element of nuance, isn't there, to anything like that, particularly in jump racing. I just think it's probably welcome if stewards have some sort of discretion to bring a bit of common sense into the equation, because common sense dictates that horse yesterday should not have been a runner. If you backed that horse yesterday, you should not have lost money on that bet.
Yeah. Imagine you're going to the races for the first time.
Yeah, exactly.
You back that horse and someone tells you, yeah, you've lost your money.
Yeah, where is the logic in that? There isn't any.
It makes no sense. No. Right, let's talk about the Grand National. Once again, this is it's been food for debate for the last couple of months and perhaps for the last couple of years, really. But interesting article by Paul Keighley in the Racing Post, and it was picked up and echoed by Davy Russell subsequently as well, who chimed with the sentiments that perhaps there should be, if not a series of qualifying ideas, maybe even a series of qualifying races for the Grand National. So the right horses are getting in, and so you end up with horses who are handicapped to run in it, but perhaps aren't necessarily suited to running in it, or perhaps are even keeping other more suitable runners out of the race.
Yeah, there's a head of steam building up, isn't there, I think, that will ultimately lead to some changes being made to the qualification procedures for the Grand National. Paul Keighley wrote an article, an email for Racing Post Members Club subscribers that Davy Russell picked up on. Paul and Davy both saying that, as you say, that there are horses running in the Grand National that probably have no chance of winning the race and are keeping horses with better chances out. And to correct that, could you have a situation whereby, for example, a horse in the current season has to have finished first, second, third or fourth in a steeplechase over 3 miles. That would bring the Grand National more into line with something like the Melbourne Cup, where qualification criteria relate to the current season and aren't historic. And I think, you know, we've had people calling for this. There's been a lot of talk about potentially having win and you're in races, so that horses who win, say, the Welsh Grand National or the Ultimate or races like that are guaranteed a spot in the Grand National. I've spoken about whether they should change the Grand National to the same as other handicaps, or by horses can get penalties after the weights come out. So that I think what you want is you want to have the best 34 horses on the day running in the Grand National. And it doesn't feel like we're getting that right now.
More general point, Patrick, but not bad being part of a Grand National team a couple of times over the last few years.
Yeah, like we've done really well in Nationals. We've had obviously two, you know, one for Arthur and then Corat Rambo. Unfortunately, didn't quite go to plan this year, but yeah, for some odd reason, we seem to be able to get a good tune out of horses for the National.
Let's talk about Willie Mullins again. Sort of subplot to yesterday was now the idea, the question's been mooted over the last week or so, having done it once, would Willie Mullins try it again? And Mullins is pledging to defend his title with gusto as Sandown salutes the champion, is the sub-headline in the Racing Post. I must admit, I've been wondering about this all week, and my sort of reasoning was, you win $500,000 in the National, that's a big, big step. In fact, it's the biggest step towards winning a trainer's title, and you're not going to do that every year. However, there may be more of a commitment to do what he's done in the last week or so all the way throughout the season. How are you interpreting that, Lee?
That's exactly right. Willie had said going into Aintree that the Grand National would be pivotal to the title, and it was. And had Aya Maximus not won the Grand National, Willie Mullins wouldn't be champion trainer, looking at the deficit between him and Dan Skelton. But the crucial point is that it was only really after the Cheltenham Festival that Willie Mullins started to have a proper think about going for the championship. Patrick Mullins wrote an article in which he said, basically, Dad, why don't you think about this? You know, we could do this. And he did start thinking about it, and he did do it. If, however, as you say, he was going to make a concerted effort to do it again, you can't bank on winning the Grand National. And therefore, Willie was making it clear yesterday that he is minded to have a proper go at it. He wants to emulate Vincent O'Brien again, who won it back-to-back in the early 50s. And he therefore looks set to make a concerted effort to target races in Britain during the winter that he hasn't previously done. Willie's modus operandi has tended to be leave Britain alone, largely, until the Cheltenham Festival. Yes, he has run it in the King George and the Tingle Creek, but not generally in those big Saturday races. I think that will change. That will change the dynamics of the Trainers' Championship. But also for British racegoers, it promises to make a lot of those winter Saturday races more meaningful, because the horses that we'll see coming over from Cliff Sutton at Cheltenham in March will hopefully also be racing through December, January and February.
Well, it's terrifying for Lucinda and Scoot when we're thinking about the Scottish National meeting and for Nicholls and Cobden throughout the year.
Yeah. But I don't know. That is, I like, if he brings a load of horses over right the way through the season, that's not an easy thing to do. Ship those horses.
No, and that's going to take it's going to take some planning. Yeah. How are you going to do it? Is it your B or C team? And I again bring this back to a slightly different discussion, Lee, very briefly, and that is, Willie Mullins calls the tune. Mm. He is the piper, and his owners dance to his tune. Now, that is an interesting dynamic in itself. Should he be in the position where he tells them where he's going to run their horses? That kind of seems to be what's happening.
Yeah, well, ultimately, the owners pay the bill. The owners employ Willie Mullins. They pay the bills. It is up to them to decide what sort of relationship they want with them and their trainer. And Willie Mullins is so successful, so good at the job, that owners are happy to basically allow Willie Mullins to call the shots. You know, you talk to any of those big owners through a week and ask them, will your horse be running on Saturday? And they'll pretty much all say, well, we're waiting to hear from Willie. And I think a key thing is a point that Harry made earlier on. He does allow them to run against each other. So, you know if you send Willie Mullins a potential grade one horse, that horse will get his or her chance in a grade one, regardless of what else Willie has got in the stable for the race at that time.
Let's move on to levy and affordability. This is it's not a feast, it's a movable disaster, isn't it? But let me ask you a general question, Harry, first of all. Sports people are generally, you're in your own bubble, aren't you? You know, I'm busy, I'm riding work, I'm going to the races, I'm driving, blah, blah, blah. How aware of you are of the racing's finances and the difficult situation that's ongoing?
To be honest, I wouldn't be aware of that at all. It's bad enough looking at how many rides you've got in the next 7 days and where you're going, what you're riding.
But some of the headlines and some of the vibe and the feeling, yeah. the worry that maybe you might just get a little tingle of.
Yeah, I mean, Nico de Bon will be the person to sit here and discuss that with you, not Harry Cobden.
OK, so let's bring in Lee Mottershead then. How should they be scared? Where are we at?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we should all be scared, because the sport is already losing millions of pounds in income, which some of which will go into prize money, as a result of changes to the gambling infrastructure with the affordability checks. There is the potential for some good news, hopefully, in the next week or two. We look set imminently to get news on a levy decision, probably by the government, because it looks as though racing bookmakers will struggle to come to an agreement. We had news this week of a letter sent by the Conservative peer Nick Herbert to the Culture Secretary, Lucy Fraser. It was signed by a number of former government senior ministers, including Ben Wallace, Priti Patel, Matt Hancock, in which they urged the Secretary of State to agree to a levy deal whereby the levy rate was increased from 10% to 11.25%, and in which bets placed by British punters on overseas racing would be incorporated into the levy. That's not a game changer for British racing, given what it's losing with affordability checks, but it would make a difference, and a difference is crucial at this time.
OK, let's move on. Final couple of points. Over in France, we've had in recent days and indeed recent months news that Christopher Head is to lose a sequence of horses, and it just seems like salt being rubbed into his open wound recently.
It seems like a crazy situation at first glance. Spanish-based owner Leopoldo Fernandez Pujals, who races his horses under the name Llegada Centurion, had incredible success last season with Christopher Head. Blue Rose Sen was a dual classic winner, and Big Rock became Europe's champion miler by winning the QE2 at Ascot on Champions Day. It was decided a few weeks ago by the owner to remove 11 horses from Christopher Head, including Blue Rose Sen, and send them across Chantilly to the yard of Maurizio Guarnieri. This week, it was decided to move the remaining 22 horses that the owner had with Christopher Head to Guarnieri, including Big Rock. So over 30 horses have left the yard. I've not seen any comment from the owner himself. Christopher Head has been diplomatic and sort of thanked the owner for the association they've had in the past and pledged to move on. But while there would clearly be stuff going on behind the scenes, it's hard to comprehend how after a year that they had last year, he can have reached a point where he decided to move all his horses out of the yard and into a stable where the trainer might well be very good. He's had success in the past, but he's not one of Europe's big names, is he? I don't think he's a household name in international racing. So he faces a big season. But you'd love to know what was in the owner's head.
Yes, and I suppose you maybe a little bit like the Amo Racing retained jockey shuffle that we've seen with Keir Jarabchin in recent years. You never quite know the internal politics.
You don't, no. And obviously, any owner's prerogative to have horses with whoever they want, it's also anybody else's prerogative to criticise their decisions.
Yeah, very much so. Right, final talking point. Jockey Club Strife. Lee, bring us up to speed on this one.
So I've penned a big special report for the Racing Post in today's edition that looks at what is a very difficult time within the Jockey Club at the moment. Rewind 3.5 years and they were in complete turmoil with the situation of Chief Executive Delia Bushell, who left the organisation at a torrid time and amid claims of bullying and much else besides. Nevin Truesdale came in as Chief Executive, and 3.5 years later, there is now real inner turmoil within the Jockey Club. It's a private members club, approaching 200 members, and a lot of those members, or a significant enough number of those members, are revolting and rebelling against the leadership. A number of issues for that. There's discontent around the Cheltenham Festival. We know numbers fell there for the second consecutive year, attendance numbers. Some members aren't happy about that, but also they're not happy that the Jockey Club senior executive didn't foresee that coming earlier. But there's a general thrust around members being unhappy at the amount of power that has been taken from the 15 Jockey Club race courses, and in particular the smaller courses, and handed to central Jockey Club control. They make arguments such as, because the Jockey Club now has central contracts with a number of sponsors, that local tracks are not empowered sufficiently to find their own sponsors to really support their own local communities. And there's also a feeling that there's too much money spent on the centre, and that the central Jockey Club HQ has now employed too many people who know too little about racing. And that is a real element of concern. Emails have flied around among members. The executive knows what is going on. I spoke to Nevin Truesdale about it. He says they're going to have a rebalancing exercise now, and it will be a hope on all sides that things will get better. But right now, things are not good.
Okay, well, maybe that story will run. Those are the talking points for this week.